hockey fans, and welcome back to the second episode of the eighth season of RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod Puckcast with Statsman and AJ Friends. I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario. You can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, as always, is AJ Scholes, a great follow at AJScholes24. He's always got something going on, whether it's raising money for charity or traveling or some adventures. We always like to weave that in because I find him to be a very interesting guy. You can follow him at AJScholes24. That's AJScholz24. He's based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, folks. And that's near RotoWire headquarters over in Madison. Allow me to welcome back our very talented AJ Scholes. What's up, AJ? Give us something to chew on in terms of what's going on in your life these days.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I mean, not a ton right now. Just settling into the rhythm. We're in week three of kindergarten for our oldest, so you know, those rhythms and what that looks like. But yeah, life's pretty calm and quiet right now.
I'm sure that won't last with the school year getting started and the kids getting a little more active with that. AJ, talk about getting more active. We had a flurry of activity earlier today on the NHL What News Wire. So we get to talk about three significant retirements among veteran defensemen in the NHL. And then there was some big salary news. Let's start with the three players, though, AJ. Zdeno Chara, Keith Yandle, and PK Subban retiring. Pick one, and we'll start talking about it.
Yeah, just kind of, I don't know if they had talked about this ahead of time or what, but yeah, weird to get like three big defensemen retiring announcements all within, you know, a matter of a couple hours this morning. So obviously I'll start with Chara, mostly because I think he's the one most likely to have a shot at the Hall of Fame. Stanley Cup winner, Norris Trophy winner, incredibly long career. I was looking earlier today at his draft class. And the last one to retire before Chara was Matt Cullen a couple of years ago. So Chara was the lone member of that 96 draft class still hanging around. So, yeah, what an incredible career. 200 total postseason games. Again, like I said, the Stanley Cup title with the Bruins. So I think he's probably got the best chance of getting into the Hall of Fame. I would doubt it would be first ballot or first, you know, opportunity, however you want to look at that. But I would eventually guess that we would see the towering defenseman in the Hall at some point here.
Well, I don't share your doubt that he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he's a shoo-in first ballot. Look at the numbers, 1,680 games played, 209 the goals scored, 471 assists, then the 200 more playoff games with 18 goals and 52 assists. That's a lot of crooked numbers. And we know he was an intimidating force, maybe the most intimidating player during his time in the NHL for sure, I would say. Nobody really wanted to mess around with him, and his fights were must-see television or videos on replay. I remember one game where he picked up Brian McCabe, who was playing with the Leafs, and just threw him around like a sack of wheat. It was unbelievable, and McCabe was not a small man at that time. You could just see his face. He kind of went, wow, when that whole flurry ended, that he was shocked at the power displayed by Chara, and that was just one aspect of him. Well, he was a very talented offensive player and a stout defensive presence, so I don't think there's any doubt that he's going to get Hall of Fame credentials. He was an all-star multiple times. He was the leader of the Boston Bruins for years and their captain. I think he's a shoo-in. But there is some doubt about the other guys. Maybe neither one of them will make it. I'm going to touch on P.K. Subban next. The guy was a very highly visible part of the Montreal Canadiens for the early part of his career, but then he bounced around the NHL with a couple of other stops later on, finishing up in New Jersey last year. And AJ, his numbers were pretty good too over his career, 834 games. He's only 33 years old. I figured he had a couple of good years left, but I really noticed that he slowed down a little bit last year and the year before. So maybe a wise choice by him. The offensive numbers were there, 115 goals, 352 assists. In the playoffs, 96 games played, 18-44 with the goals and assist totals. Don't think that those numbers in his career are going to get him to the Hall, AJ. That's my slant on him. But for the years that he was in Montreal, a very captivating presence in the NHL. And I have no doubt that he's going to go on to a post-hockey career on the media side. And we haven't seen the last of him, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely expect we'll see him on various shows. I think he did something last season during the playoffs for one of the TNT, maybe here in the U.S. So it'll be interesting to see where he lands, but he won't be long without some sort of job offer there. And I agree, probably on the media side for him. I'll take us into our last guy. We're talking Keith Yandel. Primarily, I think of Keith Yandel with the Yotes. Spent some time with Florida as well. But what Yandel will obviously be best known for is his Ironman streak, 989 consecutive games played. Unfortunately for Yandel, he's going to hold on to that for about 2 weeks into the NHL season here. You know, it looks like if I'm doing my math right, Kessel will potentially pass him on October 25th. To take over that Ironman streak. But another guy, probably not Hall of Fame caliber, just based on the offensive numbers. But really, you know, to play that many games in a row in the NHL is pretty impressive. It's just unfortunate for him that he had to do it at the almost overlapping with another Ironman of the NHL.
And you know what? His offensive numbers, AJ, were pretty credible. There were several seasons in a row where you could count on this guy for 40, 50, maybe even 60 points a year from the back end. So really an unsung guy compared to the other two defenders. But maybe he had the best set of offensive skills. And you consider 103 goals in his career, 516 assists. That's a boatload. More assists than either two of the other two defensemen. You mentioned the Ironman streak. In the playoffs, 58 games played, six goals and 36 assists. That's reflective of the fact that he didn't play for many competitive teams for much of his career, and that's probably going to keep him out of consideration for the Hall, in my opinion. But the three of these guys were all very good offensive defensemen in their day, and they deserve a tip of the hat from our corner for the outstanding careers that they each put forth. And they certainly were players that went in all the hockey pools that I drafted in over their careers. So kudos to them for that ability as well. But AJ, we're not talking just about the three guys that retired today. It's a real sign that hockey season is ramping up, though, when you start to hear other news. And there was a blockbuster today as well on the salary cap side. I'll leave it to you to go through it, and I'll rebut.
Yeah, absolutely. So one guy who I think we can fairly certain say will be a first ballot Hall of Famer, Nathan MacKinnon, signs a massive 8-year, $100.8 million contract that will see him make an annual value just $100,000 north of Connor McDavid. So Nathan MacKinnon becomes, when the contract kicks in next season, becomes the highest paid player in the league. And certainly I think he could have demanded more. You know, I believe you're allowed to pay a player upwards of 20% of the cap number. That would come in roughly $16 million. So he could have certainly asked for more. So, you know, he's been, quote unquote, the most underpaid player in the league for a while. He might still be underpaid, probably not the most underpaid at this point, but fresh off that Stanley Cup win, he's going to cash in. They'll get one more cheap season, about 6.3, I think, is the cap hit this year, and then that'll double for the next eight after that.
AJ, this guy, he did take a bit of a discount to allow this team to build a team around him that was good enough to win the Stanley Cup last year. So I give him a lot of credit for that. He said that that was important to him to be part of a competitive team, and he did his part. But and he may have taken a bit of a haircut, if you can consider $12 million plus a haircut. but you mentioned it, that the most you could have asked for is in the neighborhood of $16 million. And I wonder if a couple other guys are going to test that in a year or two. And I'm thinking primarily of Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid. Now, McDavid has got a couple of years to go. I think Matthews does as well. But next year at this time, those contract negotiations will be going full tilt. And I wonder if either of those two guys is going to give their current teams a break in that regard. There certainly are a flurry of rumors around both of them that they might not stay where they're currently located. So it's going to be very interesting to see how those two contracts play out. But I think McDavid deserves a bit of a bit of praise for the fact that he didn't hold his team for ransom like he could have. I think he could have got max money too. So it's a great contract, big money. There'll never be a telethon for him. But I wonder how this affects the other two contract negotiations that I mentioned. I'm curious to hear your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does and it doesn't, right? Like, I know I haven't looked at Matthews recently, but like McDavid has like three more years on his deal. I would imagine it comes in higher, right? But the cap will probably go up over the next like four seasons here. Just looking quickly at like who's set to be a free agent after this year, I don't know that anybody could really command quite that much. I mean, David Pastrnak's going to get a raise here at some point, but he's not going to push above that. Matthew Barzal maybe gets a little bit of an increase, but again, nobody on this list that I'm seeing here that I would expect to go upwards of that level of contract. I do think you're right. Those two will command more, but it's so hard to expect like what that'll be 4 years down the road.
Yeah, for McDavid, the contract negotiation will take place next summer. Matthews, it'll take place next summer. He's got 2 years left, but he's got a no-trade deal that kicks in next year, and the Leafs will want to get that done in the next offseason, I'm pretty sure. So that's the one that I'm looking at, and you're right. The salary cap will go up, and I'm hearing it'll go up significantly, AJ, as much as maybe $8 or $9 million is what I heard recently in a rumor. So that gives all clubs a lot more flexibility than they enjoyed in recent years. I'm curious to see how it'll be distributed among certain teams, but the wiggle room certainly will return based on the fact that the salary cap is pegged to rise over the next few seasons until the next bargaining on the current contract between the league and the players comes due.
Some quick math here, Paul. If that happens, if it goes up $8 million, Matthews could command almost $18 million on his next contract. So
that's right. That's phenomenal numbers. That's getting in line though with some of the higher paid players in other sports. AJ, I think the NHL kind of lags behind when you consider in baseball. There's players that make upwards of $30 million, and in basketball, upwards of $40 million, maybe high $40 million even. So hockey has been lagging behind those two sports, and basketball as well. You can throw that in with LeBron James making $50 million a year, whatever it is, very close. So hockey's the fourth and poor cousin among those sports, but I think they're going to close the gap with the fact that the salary cap is going to rise. AJ, there was a trade last week. We'll get to it when we get to talking about Dallas, and there's other injury news when we talk about one of the other teams. I think Minnesota, you have found a note on them, but we're going to go through the teams in the Central Division and highlight the players that we expect to line up at the forward position, defense, and in net. The depth charts will be the focus of our show. And why don't we dive in with a look at the Arizona club. Take us through your look at the forward ranks of this club. They look to be, I think, one of the weaker teams again this season.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You look at the forward ranks, not a lot of change for them on the whole. You've got, Nick Schmaltz, Travis Boyd, Clayton Keller as your top units here. Larson Krause, Barrett Hayton, and Jack McBain as your second group. A lot of that is going to be what happens with McBain. Can he, you know, produce at a top level? We only saw 10 games out of him last year. And look, Travis Boyd just isn't a first, you know, a first line center. You know, his numbers reflect that when you look over his career. Best season he's had last year at 35. His highest before that was just was 20. So this just, you know, there's just not a lot here. They've got Nick Bjugstad is in on a one-year contract. Maybe he could turn something into that. Nathan Smith is another player who could maybe factor into the top six. He played just 10 games last year, another youngster in the development here. And that's really the key with this team. Although, unfortunately, doesn't it always seem to be the key with this team, like developing young guys who may or may not make it, and then when they don't, everything gets traded away and blown up again by a new regime. So I agree with you, Paul. I'm not very impressed with this, you know, top six here. There's just not a lot in it to be excited about if you're a Coyotes fan, which, you know, is really unfortunate for the team there. Zach Cassian comes over from Edmonton, but again, you know, maybe he slots into a top six if McBain doesn't really work out there. And then a bunch of, you know, kind of, you know, Christian Fisher, Alex Chason, Andrew Ladd, a couple of guys that'll slot into a lineup here or there, but not a super deep team and not a really strong center group, in my opinion.
And AJ, part of the story has to be told when you look at the draft picks they're accumulating. You mentioned Zach Cassian. That deal was done so that Edmonton could get enough room to get Jack Campbell signed as a free agent and do some other things, maybe even for futures. But they're accumulating a lot of picks. They don't have an extra pick next year, really. They got two third rounders. They gave up a seventh rounder, but it's the following 2 years where they've accumulated eight or nine picks in the first three rounds in next year's draft, in the 2024 draft, and then six picks in the 2025 draft. So I guess that's their gambit here. They're accumulating future assets, and maybe they'll turn them into other players and other trades if they come both. But it seems to be a resting spot for any other team that has the cap difficulties. Arizona seems to come to their rescue time and time again to give them that flexibility in their locales. And I agree with you. This is a very thin offensive grouping, I'll say. I'll highlight the fact that I think there's potential in a few of the forwards. You mentioned Schmaltz and Taylor, the wingers on the top line. They are both capable. Well, last year they got 59 points for Schmaltz, 63 for Keller. I think they'll be hard-pressed to repeat those numbers unless they do an upgrade at center. And maybe that upgrade is Barrett Hayton. He's a guy that's penciled in right now for second-line minutes, but I think he could be their signature player in the middle of the ice. Got 24 points in only 60 games played, but I remember back in junior and in the World Junior Championships, this guy was a real presence for Canada, and I think he's got the potential more than any other of the centers to take that top rung and help these other guys repeat their years. Otherwise, they'll be hard-pressed. And I've been hearing for years, Lawson Gross is a guy that's desired by other teams across the league. He got 20 goals and 14 assists. Maybe he's the other remaining signature offensive piece on this roster. You'll be hard-pressed to tell me that there's any other players that will threaten the 20-goal mark. You wonder what they're going to get out of Jack McBain. I agree with you. That's a question mark. But in the absence of real pressure from the likes of Cassian and Christian Fisher on the right side, he's going to get a long look at that position. So he might be a sleeper if we can highlight one that way. I'll take us into the defense, AJ, and the signature player back there, Shane Gostisbehere. He returned to form last year with a full slate of 82 games played. He accumulated 51 points. That's more like what we saw from him earlier in his career, and he'll get every opportunity to repeat those numbers because the only other offensive piece of note is another guy that was a subject of a lot of offseason trade rumors, Jacob Chychrun. For 47 games played, he got 7 goals and 14 assists. That's scratching the tip of the surf of the iceberg for him because I think he's a better offensive talent than Gostisbehere. And the fact that he was so sought after in the offseason just underscores that. I think this guy is going to be their power play quarterback, and I could see him getting upwards of 50 points, and maybe that'll impact on Gostisbehere's numbers that way. They have Dyson Mayo and Troy Stetcher, who they acquired in free agency. He played in L.A. and Detroit last year, accumulated only 3 points in 29 games. He's a great skater. I think there's much more offense there than he showed last season. Then they rounded out with the likes of Patrick Nemeth and Josh Brown, other players that played elsewhere last season. So other than Chychrun and Gostisbehere, though, I think they'll be wanting for offense on the back end. Those are the two guys for me.
Yeah, I would agree, and I echo your sentiments about Troy Stetcher. You're talking about a guy twice hit the 20-point mark when he was with Vancouver, but since leaving the Canucks really has not lived up to any sort of offensive expectations, with those numbers really dropping the last few years. So maybe a move away from Detroit could help him kind of improve there. In the Nets, it's going to be all – Carl Vemelka this year, as it was for much of last year. You know, he appeared in 49 games for them, just 13-32-3 was the record. 8.98 was the save percentage. I think, you know, interesting additions to that for them. They brought in John Gillies to maybe compete, but he's on a two-way deal. And then also Christopher Gibson comes in on a professional tryout here. It was a kind of minimally used backup for the Islanders for a number of years, Tampa Bay most recently. And I think maybe a guy that could potentially get a look. I mean, 29 years old, has played a ton in the AHL, which is, you know, only worth so much. But I think maybe if Gillies isn't up to snuff, maybe could provide a kind of stabilizing influence behind Vemelka here. And I think, you know, that's what they need, because they're going to roll with Vemelka to the best of their ability and just go with him. They obviously weren't afraid to trot him out last year, letting him get hung out to dry for those 32 losses, and they'll hope he continues to develop there.
Yeah, but the numbers are scary, AJ. I don't think I want to touch anybody with a goals against average upwards of 3.5, and both of these guys that project to be in the mix are north of that. So that's a bit of a black hole for me in terms of preparing for the off-season draft, preseason drafts. So I'll say that. Chicago Blackhawks, they finished seventh in this division. Arizona last year was eighth, so Chicago beat them out, and they'll probably beat them out again this year, but not by much. I don't think there's a heck of a lot to talk about on the Chicago Blackhawks offense, but I'll try to highlight some of the players to watch. Certainly Patrick Kane. You wonder if he's going to play out the season, AJ. He's getting near the end of his contract and might be more valuable as a trade chip, because it looks like the Hawks are destined for non-playoff participation. And you'd hate to waste an asset like Kane, who last year, again, lit it up for 92 points in 78 games played. He's still their signature offensive piece. You can say Jonathan Taves is another guy to consider, but Taves really had an off season offensively, coming back from the previous year where we had severe medical issues that haunted him and prevented him from playing at all. So he's on the downside as well, but not as much of an asset in trade, I think, as Kane would be. Around them, they picked up Andreas Athanasiou from Los Angeles Kings. I think that's a pretty nice addition. Athanasiou should be an offensive presence here. Only 28 games played last year, 11 goals and 6 assists. You can expect this guy, if he's healthy, to threaten the 25-goal mark as a top 6 player. He's going to get a lot of ice time. And a guy who was playing in Tampa as a recently developed player there, Taylor Radish, he was in Chicago last year, got 11 goals and 11 assists. He played in 74 games, and I think he's poised for a breakout as a top 6 player here, another guy that's going to factor in offensively with an opportunity. I was curious, AJ, before I swing it over to you, about the addition of Max Domi for $3 million. They picked him up in free agency a year last year, split between Columbus and Carolina. He got 39 points in 72 games, but he's been kind of cutting a bad reputation for himself in the last couple of seasons. AJ is not really a team player, and that impacted on the fact that he had trouble finding work in the offseason. So I think he's in a prove-it situation, and maybe motivating this guy is the best thing that could happen for him. I'll leave it for you to comment on him and any other forwards that you want to take a look at here.
Yeah, I agree with you on Domi, and I'll be totally blunt. I think both Domi and Athanasiou were brought in as future trade pieces. They were each signed to one-year deals for $3 million. If Chicago is willing to trade or retain salary for improved return on investment there, you're talking about just $1.5 million that a team would have to figure out how to fit in to their cap. That's pretty reasonable. So I would expect neither of those guys to finish the season with the Blackhawks here. You know, the thing with Kane and Taves is they both have no movement clauses. Even if Chicago keeps half of the salary, you're still looking at north of $5 million that you got to fit in there. I totally agree. I think Kane's probably the better piece there. But, yeah, from my standpoint, I think Domi and Athanasiou were brought in for themselves to kind of prove it, earn better terms on your next contract. But, you know, don't anticipate finishing the year here in Chicago. If you have a good year, it works for you. You have a good year, it works for us too, because we can trade you away. So that's kind of how I view those two contracts. I'll take us in to the blue line right away. We're looking at Stanley Cup champion Jack Johnson. Throw that in there for him, pairing up Seth Jones. It'd be interesting to see if that holds. I don't know that you want Jack Johnson on the ice for the type of minutes that Seth Jones would be playing. So I could see maybe Alex Vlasic moving into that role. Some of this got shuffled around when Jake McCabe picked up a spinal injury. He'll be out until January, or neck injury, I believe. I think it was cervical spine or something. So technically the neck, but but for now we've got Johnson paired with Seth Jones and Connor Murphy with Vlasic, Stillman with Caleb Jones, as kind of our pairings here. The bulk of the offense, as expected, will come from Seth Jones, but I think Alex Vlasic is a player not to sleep on here. Certainly, I think he's capable of doing a little bit more. He's never been a huge offensive guy. You know, you look at his numbers at Boston University, there's not a ton offensively there. But I would put him maybe middle of the pack in terms of offensive upside among these guys here. I think he could offer more than, say, Connor Murphy, who had 10 points last year, or even Caleb Jones, who had 15.
Well, and for me, the intrigue is, do they put the Jones brothers together? I'd be hard-pressed to come up with a defense pairing made up of brothers in the NHL history annals. So you have to go back a long way probably to find them. And I might like to see that as a point of interest in Chicago to see how that looks. But other than that, it's the Seth Jones show on the back end. He's going to be their power play quarterback. And I think he's going to be hard-pressed to repeat a 50-point season with the lack of offensive support that I see on this club. AJ, the goalie tandem here is another one that's I'm going to say it's an ugly one. I think it's worse even than the Arizona one. I had my fill of Peter Mrazek last year in Toronto. He was a disaster behind a pretty good team. He did accumulate 12 wins out of his 18 decisions, but that was largely on the strength of the Leafs offense overshadowing his shortcomings in the nets. He was never a guy I felt comfortable watching. The goals against average was .334, and the save percentage was well below 90%. So, didn't like those numbers, and neither did the Leafs, and they had to dump him, and along with that, it cost him a draft pick again. So he's going to be the signature, the first stringer. I won't say the signature player because that implies a positive, but he's the first stringer that I see in Chicago's mix. And Alex Stalock, who's bounced around the league for a few years, is a veteran, a backup. He only got into one game last year, so you wonder if there's anything behind these two guys that's going to push them.
For them, you know, you've got Arvid Soderblom in the minors right now, Jackson Stauber. Like, those are really the only two other goalies that they have under contract right now. So it looks like it's going to be this pair. And, hey, this is a team that couldn't even rack up wins with Marc-Andre Fleury in goal. He only managed 19 in 45 games for them last year. I don't expect Peter Mrazek to be any better there. Colorado will be the next team we talk about here. We obviously hit at the top that Nathan MacKinnon will see a huge uptick in salary next season. In terms of what the offense looks like, you've got Nichushkin, MacKinnon, and Rantanen as our projected lines right now. But of course, as always, Gabriel Landeskog is in the mix to stack all three of those guys. I still think their center depth could be a little bit better. We've got Alex Newhook as the second-line center and Arturi Lehkonen on the right, but they brought in Evan Rodriguez on a pretty cheap deal A very hot and cold player in his time in Pittsburgh, but he did have some good stints as the second center for Pittsburgh when either Crosby or Malkin was out of the lineup. So I do think he could challenge Newhook. He's got some nice flexibility, though, to play on the wing, which is where we have him right now on that third line with JT Compheer and Logan O'Connor. You know, we've got a couple other guys that could factor. One thing that just came over the air as we were about to get on is it looks like Alex Galchenyuk is going to sign with Colorado on a tryout for camp. So he would be an intriguing add to their forward combinations here. Not sure if he'll make the team or where he would necessarily fit in, but if you figure Rodriguez potentially goes to the middle, they could use Galley as like a third line winger on the left or right side. So I think there might be an opportunity for him here if he can show that he's still got something left in the tank.
Well, that's a heck of a bit of news, AJ. I'm higher on Galchenyuk than most people, I'll say. I got to look at him when he came to Toronto, and when he played with top six players, he looked like a top six player. So I think if he has that in him still, he might be a real big surprise addition to this club. And it's a move that only the great teams can make. You know, the players want to have a great opportunity to rehabilitate their careers. This guy's going to a Stanley Cup defending champion and has a chance to play a top six role if he plays up to his potential. I think it's a great pickup by Colorado and could be some really good news for Galchenyuk, as I say, if he plays to the potential that I think I see in him. And that means that Newhook's hold on that second line role could be a tenuous one. Galchenyuk has played some center ice. I don't think that's what they would like to use him at here, but certainly the skill level would be, I think it could be the equal of Newhook. One of these guys is going to have a chance to really have their stats and be a sleeper pick. I think it's between those two guys. And Evan Rodriguez, you mentioned, is a viable third option. He had a 43-point season, AJ, last year. That's good numbers for him, probably a career best, and finds himself also, along with the other two guys, with a great opportunity here. So three sleeper possibilities. Comfort is comfort food for these guys as a insurance as a third line center. I think that's a luxury to have a guy who approached a 20 goal season last year. I think Logan O'Connor can expect a step up in terms of his points. He got accumulated 24 last year. I think I could see him do more than that as the next best guy who might even threaten for top 6 minutes along with some of the other guys we've mentioned. In terms of the defense depth chart, boy, oh boy, there's not too many teams that can boast the quality that these guys have in terms of offensively skilled defenders. And it begins with Cale Makar, who, for my money, is in a very small class of defensemen in hockey history that I've seen with the skill sets that he has. I mentioned the name Bobby Orr, and I mentioned the name Paul Coffey in terms of what I see in Cale Makar, a guy who can skate with anybody and have all the offensive skills he can hope for in defenseman. We saw him get the Conn Smythe Trophy last year after accumulating 86 points in the 77 games that he played in the regular season. In his shadow, though, Devin Taves, 57 points in 66 games. Those are outstanding numbers, too, probably better than more than half the league's top defensemen. So a real luxury for these guys. And then behind them, they have credible options in Bowen Byram, who is a youngster just coming into his own. He had 17 points in 30 games. And then Samuel Girard in 67 games, picking up 28 points. So a wealth of offensive depth on the blue line. And you rounded out with veteran Josh Manson with 16 points in 67 games and Eric Johnson, 25 in 77. That's a very stout-looking top six, AJ, on the blue line.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have much to add to that. Great breakdown of the blue line. So I'll jump into the goaltender, where for the second time we're seeing them go with a completely different starting netminder. First, in 21-20, we saw Philip Grubauer was their guy. He played in 40 games for them. Then last season, obviously, Darcy Kemper took over as the starter for them. He appeared in 57 games. And now it's going to be Alexander Georgiev who gets the nod here. This might be a situation where Pavel Francouz might actually be in the mix here. I would say he's on the outside looking in. Georgiev comes in to be the starter. I think there's no question about that. But I think it's maybe You know, you've got Georgiev's never hit the 20-win mark. He's never played more than 40 games in a season. Like, there's reasons to be a little bit cautious on that. Francouz is a bit of a more known quantity for them. He's been with Colorado for the last 3 years. 34 games played in 2019-20. So I think there's a possibility that this is maybe a little bit more open, that we see closer to, say, like a 60-40 goalie split. So an uptick in games for Francouz. I'm not sold that Georgiev's going to be, you know, like a 57, you know, 60 game player for them, like they got out of Darcy Kemper in the past. Having said that, with that offense in front of him, you don't have to do much here in order to win games.
Yeah, AJ, I share your cautious optimism about this pairing, and I don't think I want to bank on Georgiev being a guy that plays north of 50 games played. I could see this being a pretty even split, and the number one job up for grabs a little bit, so I don't want to commit him, either one of these guys, to be one of those few goalies that plays the big minutes for their teams this year. They're going to get solid goaltending out of the two of them, though. The numbers should be very reasonable and positive. Georgiev's save percentage of almost 90% needs to improve a tick, though, for him to stay in the mix, because Francouz was at 91.6% in the games that he played. His record was pretty solid at 15 wins and 5 losses in his effort. So I could see a split here in the early going and the job being up for grabs. AJ, take us into the Dallas forward situation, and I will answer that. And then we got a little bit of a trade to announce when we structure their defense for the upcoming season.
Sounds good. Yeah. So for Dallas right now, we're projecting Jason Robertson, Rupe Hintz, and Joe Pavelski as the top line. Pavelski, a phenomenal season last year, 27 goals. Rupe Hintz, 37 goals. Jason Robertson, obviously, bursting onto the scene with 41 goals last year. He had 45 points the year before, so that shows you just what kind of a breakout year he had. I think it's important to note that a lot of that came on the power play last season, 13 goals, 8 assists with the man advantage. So that's huge in terms of fantasy pickups here. I'm not sure I would count on him hitting 40 again. That's not an easy mark to hit, but I think 30 should be more than doable playing alongside those guys. We've got Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, and Denis Gurianov as the second line here. I think Gurianov's probably got a tentative hold on that spot. Mason Marchment came over from Florida, had a quality season last year, 47 points in 54 games for the Panthers. I think he could push for that spot on the other side. And, you know, we've seen Ben and Sagan move up and down the lineup as they've struggled the last couple of years to really be super productive, or at least productive enough to warrant their salary cap hits here. It's something we've talked about a lot on the show. Marchman, for his part, looks set to play with Faxa and Glendening. Neither of those guys should be expected to do much more than probably 25 to 30 points. Joel Kiviranta is a player that's going to be looking for a huge bounce back season. Just 7 points in 57 games last year. You know, after his postseason play the year before, where he was kind of the darling of the postseason, I think big things were expected for him this season, and it just didn't materialize. Part of it, you have to say, is the ice time, 9:31 per game last season. That's super low. So he's going to need to show something to earn more opportunities. I don't think his ice time was cut for, you know, because it shouldn't have been. He just didn't show enough last year. And if he wants to get back to being a regular producer, he's going to need to find a way to contribute and earn more of that ice time back.
AJ, I like your assessment. I'm just going to add a few notes. Interesting to see a transition away from Ben and Sagan as the top line center and winger and offensive leaders of this team. Not to say that they're done by any means. They did produce in the high 40s in points, and I could see them doing maybe something similar, approaching 50 again this year. But the development of Robertson, Hintz, and Gurianov really rounds out the top six here, and I think you can see the new wave of young offensive players in Dallas, making this a more credible offense in some. And the addition of Mason Marchment is a great move for me. I think that gives them insurance as top six depth. He'll play a third line role at the opening of the season, but certainly could slide into a top six role easily if anybody else is injured or falters. And you can say the same thing for Radek Faxa, I think, and Kevaranta should be poised to, as you say, have a bounce back season, could be a sleeper pick of some quality if you have your eye on him. And I also like the possibilities for Marian Studenik, who in a cup of coffee here didn't get a lot of ice time for this team. I think he's going to get more of an opportunity this year to show his offensive upside, and I could see him pushing for third line minutes at the very least as well. AJ, you have the honor of talking about the first trade that we of any consequence as we do these segments, because you broke the story to me this morning. I'll give you a chance to share it with our listeners.
Yeah, so Dallas brings in Nils Lundqvist from New York in exchange for a conditional first-round pick in 2023 and a conditional fourth-round pick in 2025. Should see a good amount of ice time here with Dallas, I would imagine. Far from guaranteed. Last season, he didn't play probably as much as he would have hoped for. But I would expect we're going to see something out of him here. In terms of more games played, I thought it was a lot to give up a first round pick. I'm not really sure he warrants that. He was a first round pick himself back in 2018. But it's pushed pretty far down the road in terms of, a 2023 pick. And then the other one being in 2025. So we'll see what happens here with him. But, I would expect they're clearly thinking big things out of him when you consider how little or how much they gave up for him.
And AJ, that takes us to the first four teams that we talked about in this segment, and we'll have the other four, but we're going to take a break right now and give you a chance to listen to some of our sponsors, and we'll be back to talk about another one. You're listening to the Puckcast from RotoWire with Statsman and AJ Hockey, a fantasy hockey podcast that we're very proud of here. We'll be back to you right after these messages.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, we're back, and AJ, I'm going to give you the chance to remind our listeners of our number one sponsor on board. Very excited to have this group with us, and then your weekly reminder of how people can get to us with comments or questions during the course of the season. So over to you, pal.
Yeah, absolutely. With the NFL season in full swing and the NHL just around the corner, it's the best time to try Caesars Sportsbook. Today, anyone who is at least 21 years old and in a licensed Caesars Sportsbook state can create a new account and redeem the Caesars Sportsbook promo code ROTO15. That's ROTO15. The promo code gives new users a risk-free first bet up to $1,500. Visit Caesars.com/sportsbook or download the Caesars Sportsbook app today. And don't forget to use promo code ROTO15 when signing up. And as Paul mentioned, if you want to get involved with us on social media, best place to do that is on Twitter. You can follow me at AJSchultz24. You can follow Paul the Statsman at Statsman22. If you're checking out those Twitter accounts, you'll see We go live on mine as well as the RotoWire hockey Twitter account and the RotoWire Facebook page. So if you want to check the show out live and in person, you can see it there. Otherwise, comments and questions, we're happy to answer those over on Twitter. As I said, at AJSchultz24 and at Statsman22.
All right, partner, let's continue with our Central Division preview by moving on to Minnesota, where I see Kirill Kaprizov, one of the league's more outstanding skilled offensive forwards, coming off a season where he had 108 points in 81 games played. Centering him is Ryan Hartman, who had his career best season with 34 goals and 31 assists, playing 82 games. And then Matt Zuccarello, one of the better playmaking wingers. Not only did he get 24 goals, but had 55 assists for 79 points in 70 games played. That's a pretty nice looking top line here. And the skill just continues in the second line when you consider Matt Boldy had a very nice rookie season with 39 points in 47 games played. I think you can almost double those numbers if he plays a full slate of games this year. They're going to expect something of a nice splash from Marco Rossi, who was a high draft pick for the Bears not too long ago. He played mostly in the AHL last year, and I think he's going to get a chance to play top 6 minutes. He'll battle for the second line role with Joel Eriksson Ek, who had 49 points last year. I think that Minnesota is looking for balance in the offense, so you're going to see these guys flip back and forth, I think. And then Tyson Yost, coming off a 20-point season in 80 games played, he's going to get more ice time here this season, and I think he's going to get a shot to be a top six winger on this club too. They have some flexibility because they have good depth. I mentioned Eriksson Ek, and Marcus Foligno is another guy on the third line, played 74 games last year, AJ, at 42 points. Jordan Greenway, 27 points in 62 games. They got a lot of options here, and maybe there's more in the wings here with Steele and Patan that picked up. They picked up these two guys up in the offseason as well. So a lot of flexibility up front. I don't know how you see it playing out, but those are names I think are worth mentioning.
Yeah, absolutely. I will toss in quick mentions of both Sam Steele and Nick Patan. Both, I think, are great signings for them. Sam Steele comes in on just a one-year, $825,000 contract, like pretty cheap mark for him. So if he can produce at a you know, significant level, he should be a factor there. At this point, you can basically count on him to score 6 goals because he's done that every year for the last 4 seasons, and then grab a few assists. So I like the cheap, cost-effective signing. They get Patan on a two-way deal, so they don't have to worry if they need to move him to the minors. At worst, you're getting a veteran presence on your AHL affiliate. At best, you're getting a guy who's played, you know, at times in like the top six when he's been in Winnipeg with the Jets in previous stops. So a guy with plenty of NHL experience, and I do think they're good kind of depth signings for this organization. In terms of the blue line, Jonas Brodin is going to be on that top line with Matt Dumba. I would say, you know, numbers there are not wowzer numbers in terms of offense. You've got 30 points from Brodin, 27 from Dumba, although Dumba was limited to just 57 games last year. I'd expect a little bit higher from both of those guys this year, which is, you know, solid value there. Jacob Middleton and Jared Spurgeon are set to make up that second pairing as well. Spurgeon, for his part, 40 points last year. And then Alex Goligoski and Kalen Addison, along with, you know, John Merrill, and Andre Suster, will kind of shuffle around. I would expect all of those guys to see some minutes. Addison's probably the one with the most upside. Not a lot of NHL games to his resume yet, just 18 NHL games at this point, but a second round pick back in 2018. So I think he's probably got the most upside there. The rest are veteran, you know, kind of established defenders that we'll see move in and out of the lineup here.
AJ, this is another one of those defensive cores that I really like because there's 4 credible offensive options. I mean, that'll include Alex Goligoski, I think, who's going to bounce back from 2 goals and 28 assists. I think you can expect higher numbers than that from him. There's a lot more offense in front of these guys that's going to allow the numbers to grow here. This was once thought by me for the last couple of years as a team that was offensively challenged. I don't think you can say that anymore. They've improved up front, and that's going to be reflected in the totals that these guys post on the back end. Dumba's a solid. We can go with the fact that he had 27 points last year, AJ, 57 games played. I think those numbers are low, and I think you can expect him to deliver more than that this season. Jonas Brodin, 30 points. I think you can see an uptick there as well. Jared Spurgeon, a third credible option in the top four, and Goligoski as insurance on that third pairing. What about the netminding here, AJ? I know you like one of these guys.
Yeah. Marc-Andre Fleury would be back for another year, secretly hoping he would sign back with the Penguins to round out his career. But he's got a two-year deal with Minnesota. Going to be just $3.5 million the cap hit here, so it'll be a little bit more manageable for them. They brought over Filip Gustavsson from Ottawa to fill in as the backup. I think it's the perfect kind of tandem for them. They've got established veteran in Marc-Andre Fleury, who should see the bulk of the workload, and then a younger goalie in Gustavsson, who they can give more opportunities to. I wouldn't expect Fleury to play, you know, 60-plus games here. Maybe 50, 55, I think, would be about fair for him. And so that'll give them the opportunity to kind of nurture Gustavsson, get him some opportunities without having to kind of throw him to the wolves here. So I really like this this goaltending point.
Yeah, I think I do too. And if you're in dynasty leagues, what you just said about Gustavsson really resonates with me, AJ. He's a guy that I might stash if I get a chance to include him as the depth part of my roster and looking forward into the future, because he should be poised to take the reins on behind what should be a pretty good team for the next several years here, and should really listen every time Marc-Andre Fleury's in the neighborhood of his dressing room this season. I think he's got a chance to learn from one of the best and one of the nicest guys by all accounts in the NHL. So that combination plus the track record that Fleury brings is really a great situation for Gustavsson to find himself in. He could be a real sleeper here going forward. The Nashville Predators, they finished fifth in this division last year with 897 points, AJ, and they too have a pretty nice-looking top line when you consider the offensive numbers of Philip Forsberg with 84 points, Ryan Johansson with 63, and then Matt Duchene with 86. That's one of the best-looking offensive top-line units in the entire NHL. If they can repeat those numbers again this year, they'll be in the mix for top references again. Behind them, they have some interesting options. Nino Niederreiter is a guy that I've been high on for a while. Had 44 points in something of a breakout season for Carolina. He'll get a chance to be a bona fide top six player here and maybe get more ice time that he did in his previous stop and factor into the power play, because he never really got much of an opportunity with Carolina with the stars that they had in their mix. So I like to look for him to improve on his numbers. Mikael Granlund, playmaker at center, very solid in that regard, 53 assists. I'd like to see him put the puck in that a little bit more to improve his value. Only 11 tallies in that column. Eli Tolvanen is a youngster who is maybe the most vulnerable of the top six to retain his job. He's got to do better than the 23 points in 75 games played. AJ, if I can throw it to you, maybe you can highlight other players that will threaten him in that role, in that situation.
Yeah, you know, the bottom of this lineup is not crazy impressive. You know, you've got Zach Sanford coming over from, let's see, I think he was with Ottawa at the back half of the season there, or Winnipeg, rather. And so, yeah, I think Zach Sanford is a player that could see more opportunities, 80 games, 9 goals, 12 assists. I don't really see Cody Glass or even Colton Sissons pushing for much of a larger role. Yakov Trenin maybe could be in the mix there. So not a ton of really quality depth here. I would guess, you know, I shouldn't say that. There's a lot of guys that could take steps forward in their development and become bigger players for this team. If that doesn't happen, I would expect they'll be pretty active at the deadline trying to add to the forward ranks here, in my opinion. On the blue line, this is where this team has always and continues to excel. Roman Josi, phenomenal season last year, 96 points in 80 games. I wouldn't expect 90-plus points out of a defenseman again, but certainly I don't see any reason why 70 or maybe even 80 wouldn't be possible here. Dante Fabro is his defense partner. 3 goals, 21 points. You know, biggest thing there is hopefully getting more than 66 games out of him. They bring in Ryan McDonagh, 26 points in Tampa Bay last year. I think obviously he won cups in Tampa Bay, and that was great for him. I think the last few seasons they've asked him to kind of fill a slightly different role than being an offensive contributor. I think he still has that to his game. So if that's, you know, we'll see what Nashville wants out of him, but I think he's certainly capable of still being a 30, maybe even 40 point producer if that's the role they want to put him in, which I don't think has necessarily been in the case in Detroit or Tampa the last few years. He'll pair up with Matthias Ekholm, and then they've got a couple of guys in Jeremy Lawson and Alexander Carrier who could, again, you know, step into larger, more prominent roles. You know, Lawson is 25, Carrier is 25 as well. So both those guys developing in the right direction. And that's what they know how to do in Nashville is develop defensemen. So I would expect, you know, more improvement, continued improvement from those two guys as well.
AJ, I share your sentiment with this being another top four that all four of these guys should be drafted at some point in your hockey pools this year. I think that Fabro should expect a step up in terms of his point totals to be a guy who threatens 35, 40 points in that mix. Playing alongside Roman Josi on a regular shift certainly has helped his development. I think he takes the next step. Matthias Ekholm, for years, has had one of the better contracts among all NHLers, has given them good value every year, churning out 30 to 40 points this season and playing stout defense. Ryan McDonough, a heck of an ad. I think you're going to see him improve on his offensive numbers. He only had 26 points last year, but didn't get a lot of opportunity on the special teams with that fellow Hedman ahead of him on the depth chart over there. So, and then Lauzon and Carrier, two experienced guys. Even Mark Borowiecki is a seventh defenseman with some experience. So a deep defense, you expect nothing less in Nashville. And behind those guys, one of the best goalies in hockey, no surprise, Juuse Saros, benefiting from the defensive structure of this team. But he's a real big talent, one of the better goalies in the NHL, and one of the few that can play upwards of 60 games played. He'll be pressed to do that again. He appeared in 60, almost 70 decisions last year for this club, 38 wins, 25 losses, three overtime losses on the record. Kevin Lankinen has been brought over from Chicago, and he was a starter for Chicago for stretches in the last couple of seasons. But I think he takes a more appropriate role as a backup guy here and gives some real insurance to Nashville should anything disastrous happen to Saros. So an improvement in the depth chart and the Nets, something that I didn't expect here, but certainly a quality addition with Lankinen coming on board.
For the St. Louis Blues, there were a couple of guys this offseason that got paid on long-term deals, both Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou signing 8 years, $65 million identical contracts. So clearly the Blues are trying to lock up those young guys for the long term, and no reason that they shouldn't. They both are coming off outstanding years. For now, we've got Kyrou on the second line with Ryan O'Reilly and Brandon Saad. Pavel Buchnevich, off his 30-goal season, playing with Rob Thomas and Vladimir Tarasenko on the top line. But look, I think these six guys are pretty interchangeable in terms of, you know, if they want to do different things, if they want to put O'Reilly with Tarasenko, or, you know, shuffle things around here to maybe get one guy going. I think they're totally kind of an interchangeable six pack here of players. And I think it gives them a strong front here. From my part, Paul, I don't see anybody that could really challenge for a spot in this top six. Is there anybody you see in the bottom that could get into the mix there?
Well, just based on the numbers here, AJ, there's two credible members of that supporting cast. I would say Barbashev, 60-point season last year. Braden Schenn, 58. Both of those guys played stretches of top 6 minutes for this club. Yeah, a lot of moving parts because they have that depth. I don't think we've covered too many teams that have such credible options in the third line slot, and that's why I'm pretty high on this team overall. Very experienced offensive grouping. All the names that you mentioned, and the two that I added, factor in, but they also got depth factors that will make this team tough to play against when you consider Noel Acciari and Nathan Walker among the rest of the pack here. And even Matthew Highmore, a very interesting pickup from Vancouver. I think this guy could be a real surprise and maybe a sleeper among the offensive pieces in St. Louis. In the depth chart on defense, there was a bit of a newsmaker that you discovered, AJ. Marco Scandella out for 6 months. That's a real blow here, and it will disrupt what otherwise would have been a pretty nice top four. But I think they have the answer in-house here when you consider that Nick Leddy is in the mix. 24 points last season. With the fact that Scandella is out, I think he moves up to a second pairing role with Pareko and forms a pretty stout pairing there. Leddy's been a very good offensive piece last much of his career, so I expect he will double his point total with the opportunity that now is before him. He got 3 goals and 21 assists last year. I could see him being a 40-point defenseman in this mix. But the heavy lifting will be done by the top pairing, AJ, of Torrey Krug and Justin Falk. Falk really coming into his own in St. Louis now after some doubt that I had for him, but he returned to form last year with 47 points based on 16 goals and 31 helpers. He'll be paired with Torrey Krug, who came over from Boston a couple of years ago and found life to his liking in St. Louis. I think he can do better than the 9 goals and 34 assists that he tallied in 64 games played. But he's been injury troubled. He missed 18 games again last year. So with Scandella out of the mix and the questionable health of Krug year in, year out, there may be some chinks in the armor on the blue line. I wonder if they have anything in reserve that will bolster that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to have to be, Perunovic or Nico Mikula that steps into there. I think it's definitely a weak point of this offense. They're a little, in my opinion, top heavy, or this defense rather, they're a little top heavy in terms of Torrey Krug and Justin Falk being really the only kind of quality options right now. In between the nets, a lot of this season, whether they succeed or not, is going to come down to Jordan Binnington. How recovered is that surgically repaired knee? How many games do we see out of him? Last 2 years, he's missed that 20-win mark in both campaigns. Last year, a career worst, 3.13 goals against average. Thomas Greiss comes over from Detroit to serve really as the backup slash, maybe a little bit of a veteran mentor here. But I wouldn't expect Bryce to be really the regular starter. I guess it's not impossible to happen, but if it does, it means Binnington has really struggled again. He should have the inside track to the starting job, and Bryce is kind of just a just in case break glass in case of emergency kind of situation for Bryce. So, I don't love the goaltending mix here. I'm not totally confident that Binnington's going to be able to bounce back to what we saw when he first broke into the league. And obviously question marks around how ready to go is that knee for the start of the season.
Yeah, I echo your sentiment, AJ. I think the goaltending situation is squarely on Binnington's shoulders, and it's up to him to show that he can recapture former glory and be one of the top goalies in this league. I don't think you can expect him to play much more than 50 games, though, and that's why it's important that they sign the guy with Grace's background. He's been a guy that's capable of playing longer stretches if necessary, was involved in 26 decisions last year. He needs to improve on his numbers. He'll get the chance. I think the numbers will improve organically just because he's behind a better overall team than he's been for a couple of seasons. Certainly Detroit, you can't compare them to St. Louis overall. I think you'll agree to that. So I do see an uptick in his numbers, but the challenge will be for Binnington to take the bit and really run with it here.
And Paul, I should correct myself real quick. He did not need surgery on the knee. I misread that. So not surgically repaired, but it did cost him the end of the season. So yeah, Hopefully it's back up to snuff, but I did want to clarify.
Very good, very good. I'll take us into a discussion of the Winnipeg forwards combination. Of course, they made some news with off the ice with Blake Wheeler. His title of captain of this team has been removed. That's an interesting one to consider what impact that might have in the dressing room. But he's being the good soldier and accepting it in stride, at least publicly. The look of the top line should be unchanged, even with that news. Wheeler coming off a 60-point season in 65 games played. He missed a chunk, 17 games, to minimize those numbers a little bit. But you can see that by playing with Kyle Connor, who had 93 points, and Mark Scheifele, who had 70 in 67 games, I think all three of these guys should be around a point per game. And Kyle Connor might even threaten the 50-goal mark with another season under his belt. You're one of the top snipers in the NHL. On the second line, they have a guy who has been a first liner for them in the past, and that's Nikolaj Ehlers, another guy who missed a chunk of the season. He missed 20 games, and that impacted his totals. He had 55 points. I think this guy could be a 70-point player on this team. And when you consider that Pierre-Luc Dubois is a center who's coming into his own here, 60 points in 81 games played, that's a pretty nice 1-2 punch at center when you consider him and Shifley. It gives the Jets a real edge most nights on their schedule. And then the guy who should benefit from playing in top 6 minutes here is a guy I'm calling him a sleeper, Cole Perfetti, formerly a high draft pick, and he's going to get a chance to build on what he's accomplished so far in his career. Not too much in terms of NHL action. Last year, only 18 games played, 2 goals and 5 assists, the numbers, but I think he's capable of much more, and he's going to get the chance to do that, AJ, because I don't think there's anybody really going to threaten him on the bottom six. It's a bit of a drop-off here that is significant. When it wasn't too long ago that Winnipeg was one of those teams that had 3 solid forward lines. I think I'm looking for more from what they've assembled here in the bottom six. I can't think of a name that I would consider as possibly drafting other than Mason Appleton in the deepest of fantasy leagues.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that take. And I saw one kind of speculative suggestion on Blake Wheeler that perhaps by stripping the captaincy, they're making Winnipeg less appealing to him. He's got a pretty limited no trade clause. He submits a 5-team list that he can be traded to. So between stripping the captaincy and maybe other things, maybe they're trying to convince him that, when the trade deadline comes up, he'd be willing to waive, and allow a move to a team that's not on his list. So a little speculative there, but we'll obviously monitor that situation as those rumors inevitably pop up. On the blue line, you're looking at Josh Morrissey being your offensive driver, 12 goals, 25 points last year. Neil Pionk is another guy that is capable of producing in the offensive end for them. 34 points last year. I think both of these guys are capable of slightly more. The team as a whole was down last year. But Pionk, I think you can safely count on him to hit the 30 mark with a ceiling probably around 45. That's what he put up in 2019-20. Morrissey, I think, has probably the higher ceiling between the two guys here. Even though he, hasn't had the best numbers, doesn't have the high numbers, doesn't have like a 40-point season. He's got a little more consistency to his game, and last year was actually a career best. So from my standpoint, Morrissey probably the higher upside. He'll pair with Dylan DeMello, Pionk with Dylan Sandberg. So they each get a Dylan as their kind of defensive marker guy. And then Brendan Dillon, spelled differently, and Nate Schmidt round out the bottom pairing there. So I like what they have here. Maybe one more offensive piece. Nate Schmidt had 32 points last year, so he's certainly capable of it as well. But overall, I think this is an improved defense for one that we've maligned several times over the last couple of seasons, and I think rightly so.
Yeah, I think so. And you wonder if they're going to see a step in the development of Logan Stanley, who was – ticketed now as maybe the 7th defenseman on this club. He excelled in stretches last season, but wasn't consistent. You're looking for him to take the next step. He's a big, big specimen of a player, over 6'6", I think, and can mix it up with the best of them as well. So it's a formidable 7 defensemen that they can choose from, 3 offensive pieces for sure, and maybe they got something in Stanley, who knows. But behind them all is their most valuable player year in, year out, and that's Connor Hellebuck. This guy is year in, year out, one of the top goalies picked in the NHL. Maybe he'll be a top 3 goalie once again, even though the team has taken a bit of a step backward overall, in my opinion. But you don't see too many guys that are involved in 66 decisions like he was last year. The goals against average was a touch higher than he's seen for much of his career at .297. The save percentage lower at 91%. You'd like to see those numbers improve a little bit, and that'll be reflective of the fortunes of this club. But they're in a tough division, and I'm not going to call him Big Save Dave anymore, AJ, because Dave Riddick only played 6 games for Nashville last year, and then one relief decision as well. So seven total decisions. The goals against average, 357. Save percentage, 886. He's going to have to prove it to me before I call him Big Save Dave ever again.
Seems like no save Dave out as of late.
AJ, I put it to you now to take us to the final standings as you see them. Give us the order and tell us why.
Well, I mean, for the top, is there any question here? Is anybody going to be brave enough out there in terms of, you know, prognosticators not to put Colorado at the top? That'd be a pretty bold claim at this point. So I expect Colorado to be number one, Minnesota to be number two. I think they've just got so much going for them. I've got Nashville in the three spot here. And I think what separates Nashville and St. Louis for me, you know, we talked about St. Louis more sound like forward depth. Nashville, maybe the slightly better blue line, especially in light of the Scandella injury. I trust the Nashville goaltending a little bit better. So I think they edge out St. Louis, but I would expect both of these to be playoff teams. Winnipeg, there's just not a lot of forward depth there. You know, we obviously talked about that. Connor Hellebuyck has in the past shown himself capable of stealing games. We didn't see a lot of it that last year. If they end up being a playoff team, you can guarantee that Hellebuyck had a good season. Dallas in sixth. This is just a super competitive division. And again, they don't have a ton of depth. Their blue line's maybe not quite up to snuff as some of these other teams here. Chicago, we talked about kind of just, you know, the goaltending is a huge question mark. Arizona doesn't have much of anything, so they round out the bottom here. So I don't think it's quite a have and have not. You know, I think maybe Colorado, Minnesota, 1-2 are locks. Nashville, St. Louis kind of battling out for the third spot. Winnipeg and Dallas capable of maybe putting themselves in the mix with Chicago and Arizona, the bottom of this division.
AJ, I'm almost in complete agreement with you, but I'll flip a couple of positions. The top two and the bottom two were in St. Colorado and Minnesota are the class of this division. I don't think there's any question. Colorado should win the division easily, but Minnesota is going to be a team that gets upwards of 100 points again this season to be a second place lock, in my opinion. I'm going to put St. Louis ahead of Nashville just because I really like the offensive depth, the veteran nature of this team on the back end is a plus as well, and I see a bounce back out of Jordan Binnington, and he's ably supported by Thomas Greiss, who's a pretty solid backup option here. So I don't see too many weaknesses, but you said it yourself. They're at a very deep division, and I think third place is the highest they can go. I think it's a coin flip between them and Nashville. I give Nashville the edge on defense, as you would expect, and in the Nets perhaps as well. But I don't have the faith in Nashville's forward ranks that I do in St. Louis, and that's tipping the scales for me in that pairing. Then I give Dallas a slight edge over Winnipeg. I really like what Dallas has done in the last few years, infusing some youngsters into the offense, and it has a credible look in terms of being a threatening offense and a deep offense, really. And I like their situation. They're a little bit better than Winnipeg. I think the controversy of the captaincy and a couple other issues this team has had over the last little while, you're not sure whether Pierre-Luc Dubois really wants to be there. I've heard stories about that. He wants to be maybe playing in his hometown in Montreal. That's something we could look for later in the season if their fortunes flounder here. Maybe they'll make something happen in that regard. And the Cellar Dwellers, it's going to be a coin flip between Chicago and Arizona, two very bad teams. And anytime they suit up against other clubs, you're going to load up on them in fantasy DFS play, which we will infuse into our broadcast when the regular season starts. AJ, any final thoughts from you before we sign off on week two of our preseason schedule?
No, I mean, looks like you've got us pegged for the Metropolitan Division next, so I'm excited about that. Clearly, I've got the Penguins at the top of the Metro. You know, why not? Of course. I don't know who could possibly challenge them. But, yeah, looking forward to next week. And obviously things are picking up with training camps kicking off on Thursday here. The news is picking up, and we'll continue to bring you all that as it comes out.
Absolutely, partner. And I can't wait to get to the regular season, but we got two more of these to do and lots of player movement to talk about in those divisions. I think I can come up with a couple of names of teams that will threaten your Penguins and standings, but I'll save that to next week. And we'll sign off today. As always, we remind you that we're here to assist you to win your hockey pools and enjoy your fantasy hockey experience all season long. So we encourage you to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22, and you can follow AJ at AJ Scholes24. So long, everybody.